Today is Tuesday, the 10th of February, and you are listening to the World Socialist website. Class Struggle, USA. Major strikes erupt nationwide. Tom Hall, February the 9th, 2026. The first month of 2026 has seen the eruption of major social struggles in the United States, beginning with the mass protests against dictatorship and ICE killings. Opposition is now increasingly taking on a class character with the emergence of the developing strike movement. On Monday, 6,400 San Francisco teachers walked out on strike in a city where housing costs have been driven to unaffordable levels by the spending of tech billionaires. Teachers are demanding wage increases, enforceable class size limits and staffing levels, and increased funding. They are striking as high school students, defying threats from school administrators, politicians and teachers' union bureaucrats are walking out nationwide in opposition to the assault on immigrants. In Los Angeles, tens of thousands of teachers have voted to authorize strike action over the same issues, while 40,000 graduate students across the University of California system are currently voting to authorize another strike. Also on Monday, 4,000 pharmacy and laboratory workers joined the ongoing strike of 31,000 Kaiser Permanente nurses and other healthcare workers, now entering its third week, against profit-driven cuts to healthcare. It is significant that on the same day, the unions in New York moved to betray a month-long strike by 15,000 New York City nurses, precisely because of the potential emergence of a national movement by healthcare workers. Growing militancy among refinery workers is fueling opposition to a new contract that fails far short of demands for higher wages and job security. Tens of thousands of workers at UPS, Amazon, in the auto industry and elsewhere are also fighting mass layoffs. These struggles are being driven by inflation, the deterioration of living standards, the destruction of jobs, and the broader rampage of the corporate and financial elite against all the rights of workers. The artificial suppression of organized resistance by the union bureaucracy has produced a situation in which decades of pent-up social tensions are now bursting into the open. This movement must find new channels. The growing size and duration of strikes reflect the increasing difficulty the union apparatus faces in suppressing organized resistance, a role it has played for decades. But the bureaucracy is doing everything it can to disrupt and isolate this resistance. Its six-figure salaries, billions in assets drawn from workers' dues and access to management and corporate politicians all depend on its ability to fulfill this function. The compensation for Becky Pringle, the president of the National Education Association, NEA, the parent organization of the union on strike in California, is nearly $500,000. The president of the United Steelworkers, the USW, David McCall, brings in $250,000, and UAW president Sean Fain is paid $270,000. These officials preside over apparatuses that control billions of dollars used to finance an entire layer of bureaucrats whose interests are independent of and hostile to those of rank-and-file workers. In response to the mass protests against ICE murder, the union bureaucrats opposed participation in a general strike in Minneapolis, cynically citing, quote, no-strike clauses that they themselves inserted into contracts. Their outlook was summed up by an injunction from teachers' union officials in San Diego, responding to growing support for action from rank-and-file teachers, quote, obey now, grieve later, end of quote. In California, the California Teachers Association, the CTA, has kept most major districts on the job for months under the hypocritical slogan, quote, we can't wait. In New York City, the New York State Nurses Association, the NYSNA, responded to the expansion of the Kaiser strike by announcing a sellout agreement with none of the nurses' demands. They are holding snap ratification votes, which would end the strike at three hospitals, while isolating nurses at one remaining hospital, New York Presbyterian. The move has nurses, quote, filled with rage, as one striker put it. The United Steelworkers, which bragged in 2022 that the last contract fought inflation by depressing wage increases, is now attempting to ram through a national deal that would isolate workers at the BP refinery in Whiting, Indiana. The contract is also a war contract, sandwiched in between Trump's war to seize oil in Venezuela and the next war now being planned against Iran. The bureaucracy is attempting to prevent any break from the stranglehold of the Democratic Party, which is more terrified of a mass movement than of fascism, and which is implementing austerity at the local and state level. In California, teachers directly confront the Democratic Party, which controls the government at the state and local levels. In New York, Governor Kathy Hochul responded to the nurses' strike by issuing emergency orders to help bring in scabs. The New York Police Department, the NYPD, under the administration of so-called Democratic Socialist Mayor Zoran Mamdani, arrested more than a dozen striking nurses at a demonstration last week. The sellout contract was brokered by Mamdani and Biden's former Labor Secretary, Julie Hsu, whom Mamdani had appointed to his city administration. In a speech Monday at the United Auto Workers' so-called, quote, Community Action Program conference, in reality a meet-and-greet for Democratic Party officials, Union President Sean Fain warned that, quote, fascism is on our doorstep, declaring, if you think it can't happen to you, you're fooling yourself. If you think that it can't happen on a UAW picket line, you're crazy, end of quote. Yet he proposed no action. The words, general strike, arose only from a single shout from the audience. Instead, Fain pointed to the 2026 midterm elections, elections that Trump is openly preparing either to cancel or conduct at gunpoint, and to 2028, when the UAW sellout contracts expire, promising vaguely that, quote, we're going to do whatever the hell we have to do, more than 2 years from now, when it will be too late. His choice of words here quietly abandons earlier rhetoric about supporting a general strike, even at that distant future. Fain ominously declared, quote, we are not Democrats or Republicans, not to argue for a break with the two-party system, but to signal the union's willingness to collaborate with open fascists as well as Democrats. The UAW is one of several unions cultivating ties with Trump, supporting his fascistic, quote, America First economic nationalism, while preparing to endorse anti-immigrant racist and right-wing populist figures such as Dan Osborne. As the class struggle continues to grow, the bureaucracy will try ever more openly and shamelessly to sabotage it. Workers therefore need the means through which they can fight this sabotage, unite on a national and international scale, and establish their political independence and initiative. The International Workers' Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees, the IWA-RFC, urges workers to form a network of committees composed of trusted shop-floor militants to discuss strategy and prepare joint actions across industries, regional and national borders. The bureaucratic apparatus that exists to suppress the class struggle must be abolished, and power must be transferred to the shop floor. Such committees will give workers the power to oppose sellouts and override decisions that violate the will of the membership. In New York City, for example, the New York Nurses Rank and File Committee is fighting for the expansion of the strike to all 15 NYSNA-represented facilities and the provision of strike pay so nurses can sustain the fight for safe staffing and livable wages. It is urging nurses to make an appeal to healthcare workers nationwide, at Kaiser and elsewhere, to link up with broader sections of the working class, not Democratic politicians. At the same time, the IWA-RFC calls on oil refinery workers to reject the latest sellout national contract being pushed by the United Steelworkers, which isolates BP workers. They must not allow another war contract to be imposed under the pressure of escalating militarism and energy nationalism. Rank-and-file committees should embrace the whole working class, not just those in unions, in order to prepare the ground for a general strike. They are based on a strategy of class struggle and the international unity of the working class, regardless of nationality, race, or immigration status. Committees must become organizing centers for working class opposition to immigration raids and other police state measures in the workplaces and neighborhoods. A mass movement is emerging. The outcome depends on whether workers break the grip of the union bureaucracy and intervene as an independent social force. Washington preparing military strikes against Iran. Keith Jones, February the 10th, 2026. The US military is poised to attack Iran after a massive weeks-long redeployment of warships, bombers, and personnel to the region. The forces arrayed against Iran, a historically oppressed country that has been subjected to decades of American imperialist aggression, include 1. An armada bristling with Tomahawk cruise missiles and F-18 fighter jets and EA-18 Gralla electronic warplanes, led by the USS Abraham Lincoln, the world's largest aircraft carrier, is now deployed in the Arabian Sea off Iran's southern coast. 2. Two destroyers stationed in the Persian Gulf at the strategically critical Strait of Hormuz and three more warships further north off the coast of Qatar. 3. Fleets of additional fighter jets and surveillance planes, air defense batteries, and 40,000 troops at more than 24 heavily armed bases across the region. 4. And almost certainly one or more nuclear submarines. Information on the whereabouts of the Pentagon's nuclear submarine strike force is highly classified. Key U.S. allies are also readying for war. Israel, which last June waged an illegal, unprovoked 12-day war on Iran in conjunction with the United States, has placed its military forces on, quote, high alert. As of last weekend, Britain has deployed 6 F-35 stealth fighters to Cyprus, where they have joined a fleet of Typhoon fighter jets active in operations in Iraq and Syria. With the Trump administration on the verge of setting the entire Middle East ablaze, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has advanced his impending trip to Washington by 1 week. He will now meet with Trump this Wednesday to discuss their joint project to subjugate Iran. According to the Jerusalem Post, high-level Israeli sources have said that Netanyahu will tell, quote, the Americans, "We will strike alone if Iran crosses a red line we set on ballistic missiles," end of quote. On Sunday, Netanyahu's far-right government made legal changes to facilitate Israeli property purchases and settlements in the occupied West Bank, in a step his fascist finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, boasted was meant to, quote, kill the idea of a Palestinian state, end of quote. The military build-up and Washington's moves to further tighten the enforcement of crushing economic sanctions are key elements in a multi-track strategy aimed at subjugating Iran and installing, whatever the precise composition of its leading personnel, a regime that will place Iran's energy resources at the service of US imperialism and break Tehran's strategic ties with China and Russia. Since late last year, America's fascist would-be dictator, President Donald Trump, has repeatedly threatened to attack Iran, invoking various pretexts, from eliminating its civilian nuclear program to, quote, defending protesters from Iranian state repression. Trump has boasted that the U.S. naval force now menacing Iran is far greater than that Washington deployed last month off Venezuela before attacking the South American country, kidnapping its president Nicolas Maduro and proclaiming it was seizing the country's oil resources. Trump has also vowed that a U.S. attack on Iran would be far bigger and more lethal than what it and Israel mounted on Iran 8 months ago, which killed more than 1,000 people, the vast majority of them civilians. Trump and his aides have also suggested that a second U.S. attack on Iran could involve a, quote, decapitation strike, even larger than that with which Israel initiated in the June 2025 war, and could potentially target Iran's 86-year-old supreme leader, the Ayatollah Khamenei. As it did following last June's war, Iran's crisis-ridden, Shia clergy-led bourgeois nationalist regime has responded to the escalating imperialist aggression by appealing to the Trump administration for talks. Tehran has indicated that it is ready to make major concessions on its civil nuclear program in exchange for an easing of economic sanctions. These concessions reportedly include shipping out of the country virtually all of Iran's enriched uranium and maintaining only the bare bones of a civilian nuclear program, so as to assert Iran's sovereign right to do so under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Washington, however, keeps upping its demands. It calculates that the Islamic Republic has been severely weakened. With the assistance of the European imperialist powers, Washington has largely succeeded in crashing the Iranian economy, fueling mass deprivation and anger with the regime as it places the burden of the confrontation with imperialism on Iran's workers and toilers. The protests that shook Iran from late December through mid-January came to be increasingly dominated by right-wing petty bourgeois forces calling for the return of the blood-soaked US-sponsored Pahlavi monarchy. Nevertheless, the scale of the state repression, its arbitrary character, the fact that Iran has not restored internet contact with the world, and a continuing wave of mass arrests speaks to the regime's social isolation and ever-diminishing popular support. Further compounding the crisis are the reversals that Tehran's allies across the region have suffered over the past 2 years, including in Syria, Lebanon, and Israel-Palestine. Since October 2023, Washington and its Israeli attack dog have dramatically escalated their drive to create a, quote, new Middle East under unbridled American imperialist domination through aggression, war, and in Gaza, outright genocide. On the part of Washington, the, quote, negotiations that were initiated with Tehran last Friday as the U.S. military encircles Iran and primes for war are very much a probing operation. They are aimed at extorting concessions and exacerbating and leveraging divisions within the Islamic Republic's clerical bourgeois political establishment and military security forces. The talks can also serve as a cover for the decision to go to war. Last June, Trump encouraged Iranians to believe that he was intent on pursuing negotiations after he had already given the green light to the Israeli attack that launched last June's war. Trump claimed that last Friday's talks, which were held in Muscat, Oman, rather than US-NATO ally Turkey at Iran's insistence, were, quote, very good. He added, Iran looks like it wants to make a deal very badly. He said that there would be further negotiations this week. But the very same day, Trump signed an executive order targeting countries that trade with Iran in defiance of Washington's unilaterally imposed sanctions with tariffs. He also imposed additional sanctions on shipping companies and vessels allegedly involved in transporting Iranian oil, with the aim of further choking its oil exports, the lifeblood of its economy. Moreover, Trump and his administration continue to signal that a military strike on Iran could be imminent. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt was insistent Thursday that the impending talks with Tehran in no way represent a pulling back from the threat of a military strike. Quote, while these negotiations are taking place, I would remind the Iranian regime, said Leavitt, that the president has many options at his disposal aside from diplomacy as the commander-in-chief of the most powerful military in the history of the world. End of quote. To further underline this, Trump's lead negotiators in Oman, U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff and his son-in-law Jared Kushner, made a visit to the USS Lincoln the next day, reportedly at the invitation of the head of the U.S. Military Central Command, Admiral Brad Cooper. While Friday's talks were apparently restricted to Iran's nuclear program, which Trump has vowed to entirely dismantle, his administration has outlined a series of demands that would effectively constitute Iran's unilateral disarmament, leaving it defenseless and powerless before US and Israeli threats. Chief among these demands are cessation of all support for Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis of Yemen, and other allies in the so-called Axis of Resistance, and a drastic reduction in Iran's ballistic missile capacity, including a legal ban on it possessing missiles capable of reaching Israel. Trying to put the best face on developments, Tehran has joined Trump in claiming the outcome of Friday's talks was positive. Foreign Minister Sayyed Abbas Araghchi told Iranian state television, quote, there is an understanding on continuing the talks. If this process continues, I think we will reach a good framework for an understanding, end of quote. Iran, according to a regional diplomat said to be familiar with the talks, reportedly called for, quote, immediate sanctions relief, including banking and oil, and the moving of U.S. military assets away from Iran, end of quote, in exchange for greatly scaling back its nuclear program and the resumption of regular International Atomic Energy Agency inspections. Publicly, the Iranian regime has insisted that any negotiations must be restricted to its nuclear program, but it has also hinted that in the event of sanctions relief, it might be prepared to enter broader negotiations. For decades, a significant faction of the regime, of whom the current president, Masoud Pezeshkian, is a representative, has advocated for a rapprochement with the European imperialist powers and Washington, including by opening up the Iranian economy to Western investment. the so-called hardline principalist faction and the leadership of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards have generally opposed this, arguing instead for an orientation to China and Russia. Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei has tried to balance between the two factions. Washington, however, has time and again rejected Tehran's overtures. It has never reconciled itself to the loss of the Shah's tyrannical monarchical dictatorship. The massive erosion of American imperialism's relative economic might and world position only make it more aggressive and determined to return the Iranian people to neo-colonial subjugation, so as to plunder its resources and strategically weaken its rivals. China is Iran's largest export market and accounts for more than 90% of its oil exports. In the face of the menacing US military deployment, Tehran has issued warnings that should Iran come under US attack, it will respond far differently from last year. After the US openly joined the war attacking Iran's nuclear facilities, including with the world's most powerful non-nuclear bomb, Tehran mounted a solitary token retaliatory attack, which it signaled to Washington well in advance. As intended, the attack caused no casualties or substantive damage. Many of Washington's regional allies have expressed fear of a regional war, the impact this would have on their economies and restless populations. Left unsaid is the prospect that a US-Iran war could draw in not only regional powers but the great powers as well, because it will mark a major new stage in the US-led drive to repartition the Middle East, the world's principal oil-exporting region and one lying at the pivot of Asia, Africa and Europe. Widespread anger over NYSNA's sellout bid to end New York nurses' strike. Daniel DeVere's, February 10, 2026. On Tuesday, February 10, at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Pacific Time, the WSWS and the International Workers' Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees are hosting an online meeting, The Nurses' Strikes and the Movement Against Dictatorship. Register to attend. The New York State Nurses Association, the NYSNA, announced tentative agreements Monday covering three of the four hospitals involved in the month-long strike of 15,000 nurses in New York City. The union bureaucracy is preparing to send nurses at the facilities operated by Montefiore and Mount Sinai back to work, leaving the remaining 4,500 nurses at New York Presbyterian to fight on their own. A snap vote on the agreement has been called, with voting beginning Monday and concluding either Tuesday or Wednesday, depending on the hospital. The New York Healthcare Workers Rank and File Committee, the NYHWRFC, is calling on nurses to vote no on the agreements by the widest possible margin. NYSNA's attempt to demobilize three-quarters of the strike without a comprehensive settlement for all the hospitals is a stab in the back. Even if the contract included adequate raises and the necessary improvements to staffing levels and safety, which it absolutely does not, the betrayal of New York's Presbyterian nurses cannot be justified. The tentative agreements do nothing to resolve the core issues of unsafe staffing and overcrowding. At Mount Sinai, the hospital agreed to just 30 additional full-time hires out of the 700 that were needed. At Montefiore, the agreements omit any measures to alleviate overcrowding, leaving in place a situation in which nurses are often forced to treat patients crammed into hallways. On pay, nurses would receive only around a 12% wage increase over 3 years, nowhere near the 30% demand at the outset of negotiations. However, even the 12% comes with givebacks, as the raises are not retroactive and only start in March. Meanwhile, the tentative agreements do not reinstate fired nurses, effectively sanctioning the victimization of nurses. On the eve of the strike, Mount Sinai fired three labor and delivery nurses based on false accusations of hiding supplies from scab nurses. The firings follow disciplinary action against nurses who raised security concerns after an incident with an armed individual in December. The NYHWRFC warned in its founding statement that the union bureaucracy was preparing to shut down the strike on management's terms. The agreement announced Monday fully vindicates this assessment. That statement declared, quote, "The strike can be won, but only if healthcare workers take matters into their own hands. The purpose of the committee," it explained, "is to be, quote, an organization controlled by workers ourselves, independent of the union apparatus, to assert democratic control over bargaining and strike strategy," end of quote. The attempt to break the unity of the strike has provoked outrage, with one Mount Sinai nurse describing her co-workers as filled with rage. Many are mobilizing to reject the contracts. Quote, "Out together, in together" has emerged as a powerful slogan among nurses in response to the sellout. The sellout comes at precisely the point when the nurses' position is at its most powerful. On the West Coast, pharmacy and lab employees walked off the job Monday, joining 31,000 Kaiser Permanente nurses and healthcare workers, who have been on strike for 2 weeks. Also on Monday, 6,000 public school teachers began a strike in San Francisco, shutting down the district to 120 schools. The eruption of strikes on both coasts occurs alongside mass opposition to the brutal ICE murders in Minneapolis, triggering widespread protests, school walkouts, and calls for a general strike. The New York nurses' strike is part of this developing working-class movement, but it faces an obstacle in the trade union bureaucrats, who are working on behalf of management and corporate politicians to disrupt and disorganize this movement. Already before the strike, the NYSNA had cancelled action at 11 of 15 hospitals without having even reached tentative agreements. Rather than appeal to the immense support for the strike in the working class, NYSNA has paraded Democratic Party officials to mouth empty support on the picket lines. But the Democratic Party has proved to be the biggest ally of the hospital executives, not striking workers. Governor Kathy Hochul has renewed a strike-breaking emergency order, allowing nurses without licenses in the state to work as scabs. Mayor and self-described Democratic Socialist Zoran Mandani appeared twice on the picket lines, where he denounced the tens of millions in compensation for hospital executives. Now he is not only publicly supporting Hochul, but also the New York police, who arrested striking nurses protesting outside of the headquarters of the Greater New York Hospital Association. There can be no doubt that the contract was worked out in coordination with the Mandani administration, in particular Deputy Mayor for Economic Justice Julie Hsu, the former Labor Secretary under President Joe Biden. She specialized in brokering contracts to head off or shut down strikes which challenged the interests of the ruling elite. In 2023, she rammed through a West Coast docks contract after dock workers began organizing wildcat actions in defiance of the ILWU, the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, keeping them on the job for a year past the previous deal's expiration. In 2024, she was dispatched to shut down a strike at Boeing in a similar fashion. She was similarly involved in the ban on a national rail strike in 2022 and a White House-backed auto workers contract in 2023, which has led to thousands of layoffs. NYSNA and hospital executives are banking on the calculation that the economic strain of the strike will weaken nurses' resolve and provide enough, quote, yes votes to pass the sellout agreement. The strain is real. The union has refused to provide strike pay, while the hospitals have cut off health insurance. But nurses can turn the tables. The movement against the contracts must be a starting point for a new strategy, controlled democratically from below. At every hospital, nurses should hold emergency meetings to elect rank-and-file committees, consisting of the most trusted nurses and not union officials, to prepare for the expansion of the strike to all 15 facilities. They must demand immediate retroactive strike pay to provision nurses for a serious fight and to counteract attempts to soften them up. Rejecting the subordination of their struggle to one or another establishment politician, nurses must then turn to their real allies, the working class. They should organize pickets to fan out to major workplaces across the city to appeal for the widest support and build lines of communication with Kaiser workers on the West Coast to coordinate strategy on a national scale. On Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 4:30 p.m. Pacific Time, the WSWS and the International Workers' Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees, the IWA-RFC, are holding an online meeting to discuss the way forward in the struggle. We urge all nurses looking for a way to oppose the sellout to attend and participate. To register for the meeting, go to the WSWS article on the website and register there. For these articles and more, go to the World Socialist website, wsws.org. For the World Socialist website, this has been Carol Diviak.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.